Welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, the latest on shares, markets and investments, now available on your Amazon Alexa.
Hello and welcome to the UK Investor Magazine podcast, now also available on the UK Investor Magazine mobile app. Today we have with us Alan Green. Alan's going to be discussing a number of equities and we're going to go through the key market themes as well. So Alan, thank you very much for being with us today.
Hello Jonathan, good to be back.
So we've got a particularly busy week today to discuss in markets, Alan. We've seen some very sharp moves to the upside in global indices, and that's something that we're going to touch on initially. But also there's been quite a lot going on in the corporate world with some updates from FTSE 100 companies, as well as some quite interesting moves in some of the small caps. So we're going to discuss those as well. But Alan, as we recording this podcast, we're looking at a FTSE 100 here trading in the region of 75.80, and that represents a very sharp increase from the lows that we saw last week. Overnight, we had an installment of earnings from Alphabet, the parent company of Google. Now, Google actually saw a 33% increase in their advertising revenue, which is a huge increase, and that's caused Alphabet shares to jump 10%, a massive component of US indices, and that's causing a wave of optimism around the world. But take things back to the FTSE 100 here, Alan. Trading at 75.80, we're not too far away now from the highs at around 76.20, and that would be the highest level we've seen since the beginning of the pandemic.
Yeah.
If we break that, then there's not much in the way of resistance up until we see the all-time highs at around 7,900. I mean, given what's happening and we're starting to see a bounce back in tech shares, I mean, if this continues with further good earnings from the technology companies, is this going to lead to an overall buy into global equities that could see us smash through that 76.20 level in the FTSE 100 in the short term?
I think that's a highly likely scenario, John. And also, somebody made the point to me the other day that, of course, the FTSE's been really, it's massively underperformed over the past 10 to 20 years compared to its counterparts. The Dow, the US indices have rocketed, doubled, well over doubled in values since about, the past 10 years. And the FTSE really hasn't. And somebody said that they believe that now we have broken away from Europe, that the general belief was that with the alignment with Europe and being so closely tied into the European financial infrastructure, the FTSE was never really had a chance to perform in its own right without being hamstrung by the European economies and also, of course, the weaker economies there. Now we are, largely free of that. They're very bullish about the prospects for the FTSE. They believe the FTSE 100 is dramatically undervalued compared to its rivals, and indeed that was reiterated, I think, by JP Morgan, that said last week that FTSE 100 stocks are looking very cheap at the moment. So even though we're seeing the index starting to approach those highs, the former highs, I think there is scope for it to go much, much further. And of course, there are a basket of resource stocks in there that always do a very good job of propelling the FTSE forward. There's some great technology companies in there that will do the same. So, yeah, I'm pretty bullish about the outlook for this year.
Yes, indeed. And I think when we start to see talks around interest rates, which we have done so far, it does cause the initial jitters in markets. But if you go back and look through history, in tightening cycles, you tend to get the initial sell-off. But if we see an interest rate cycle that sees higher interest rates during a period of economic expansion, that's usually good for stock markets. So if that continues through the rest of this year, those all-time highs in the FTSE 100 could well will be in sight in the not too distant future.
Yep.
And one, Alan, now this is the first company we're going to discuss today. One of the components that will have to be, you know, part of that rally in the FTSE 100 due to its large weighting in the index is Vodafone. They've actually reported today, shares up 3%. Mm. A fairly good set of figures there, Alan. They said they're looking to be proactive around their portfolio of assets. So what's happening there?
Yeah, so as you say, John, it's a major constituent of the FTSE 100 Vodafone. Currently worth 36 billion, just under 36 billion, and of course pays out a dividend yield of 5.8%. We're coming up to year highs again. It was at 142 pence year high, now 132 pence off year lows. Had a really strong recovery, in fact, since December, where it was just on those year lows, in fact, and it's bounced nicely off those. So great start to the year. So anyone who picked it up last December will be sitting on a decent gain. But certainly, you know, as you say, you know, in the post Brexit scenario, this is one company that could do very well. You know, because it can now do deals as a UK company with around the world, unencumbered by perhaps some of the restrictions that were placed on it by Europe when we were part of the part of Europe. But the results this morning show a 2.7% increase in service revenue, and that service revenue was driven by growth in Europe and in Africa, which is a very bullish sort of scenario, given that we are the revenue period was still in the middle of COVID, and there is speculation, of course, that Vodafone could tie up a deal with the Three network and with other providers throughout the world. But it's a leviathan, you know. It's a huge company, of course. You know, service revenue for quarter three announced 9.64 billion euros. I mean, that's a huge amount of revenue by any standards. So I think if we look at the overall picture going forward, I think it will continue. The company will continue to deliver growth ongoing, unencumbered as it is now by the European ties. But of course, a company of this size delivering the sort of growth investors would like to see is a task in itself. You know, it's a super tanker of a stock. This, it really is. So it takes a while to turn around and to make improvements and to cut costs. But nonetheless, you know, the management team are doing a good job. You know, certainly the Nick Reed, the group's chief executive, is giving great leadership at the front there. And you know, he's also said in outlook the performance keeps the company firmly on track to deliver results in line with the higher guidance that they set out in November. So yeah, a good year in prospect for Vodafone, and a good set of numbers today, and certainly justifying the 3.5% hike we've seen in the share price this morning.
Yes, indeed, and of course the introduction of an activist investor there usually does streamline the business in some way and cut out some of those more costly operations over time as they look to thin things down and focus on the operations that are actually there to generate revenue and therefore profit for the business. So we obviously touched on there on a potential takeover of Three. There was some speculation last year around this. Of course, it's all been very hush hush since there, but there's surely something bubbling in the background. So unlikely that we don't hear too much in the short term, but going forward, I'm sure we hear more about that. But it just sort of brings up the topic, Alan, of takeovers and bids that are happening at the moment. It seems so far this year, there's been lots of potential takeovers being spoke about. Of course, there was Unilever and GSK and the Microsoft and Activision deals. Just want to touch on those quickly. Unilever and GSK, Alan, first. Unilever were looking at the GSK consumer business, and GSK basically came back and said, look, it's, the offer's not high enough. And, you know, Unilever said, we're not going to spend any more. I mean, do you think that deal's dead, or do you think that there could be something there that comes back to life in the not too distant future?
No, I think that's just the opening salvo in what will be a protracted negotiation. Obviously, you know, the news disappointed shareholders. The shares did fall back a bit on the news, and of course we're trading now, you know, close to year lows for Unilever at £37.50 a share. Again, you know, there's the broad spread of domestic products and foods offered by Unilever do make it a very good defensive play, but certainly the opportunity to buy Glaxo's consumer healthcare business, you know, would have been a great addition to Unilever because it brings them economies of scale and an opportunity for growth, and I think investors saw that. But equally, a lot of pundits in the city have been applauding Unilever's disciplined approach to this, saying that they're, you know, it's good that they're just not going to jump at any price. They valued the business fairly at £50 billion, you know, which is a huge amount of money by any standards. But they valued the business fairly. They're not going to pay any more, and they're going to stick to their guns. And it's really a consideration now for Glaxo. You know, the Unilever have laid out their that they set their stall out, said, you know, that they valued it. This is what we're prepared to pay, and they're not just going to you know, come back with a higher figure. So it may well be abandoned. It may not. But my guess is it's going to be a long, drawn out, protracted process, and the sales figures for Glaxo's consumer healthcare arm, and of course that includes products such as Sensodyne toothpaste and Panadol painkillers. I think the market's going to be looking very closely at sales for the GSK consumer healthcare products this year, just to see how they're doing and to see if Glaxo themselves can bring any uplift to overall sales. But it's going to be one to watch, and certainly I wouldn't say that's dead by any standards.
Yes, one to keep an eye on. So, Alan, Microsoft and Activision. So this deal would be the largest cash deal since the beginning of the pandemic, at some $69 billion. But it's now under the scrutiny of the FTC. They're looking at how that relationship between Activision and Microsoft would impact its rivals in terms of looking at the availability of other consoles, such as obviously PlayStation, of accessing games that are produced by Activision. I mean, this is something that we're going to have to keep a very close eye on. But I mean, going back to the overall strategic move by Microsoft moving into Activision and obviously games publishers, I mean, does that really for you highlight the growing market of games? And is this something now that, you know, investors could be looking at other games publishers as, you know, potential stocks to buy into if they're going to be taken over by, you know, larger technology companies to integrate into their ecosystems?
Absolutely. And I think that's the great thing about a burgeoning market, you know, such as the gaming industry and esports. You know, it's growing at such a rate. It's capturing investor and, of course, you know, the gamers themselves, you know, that are in the middle of it. They're seeing that they see the commercial opportunities that this surge of interest into the sector has born, and of course that creates a number of problems. I mean, you know, the Microsoft Activision merger is, you know, it's a huge deal financially. You know, getting off of $70 billion, you know, that's a big merger, and obviously it's one that's created competition concerns, which is why the Federal Trade Commission have got involved. And you know, they're certainly not a toothless organization. They you know, last month that they voted to block the proposed merger between, or the proposed acquisition by Lockheed Martin of Aerojet Rocketdyne Holdings due to antitrust concerns. So there is, you know, these issues had to be looked at in detail, But I sense that this one will go through. I just think that it's such a burgeoning sector. There are companies growing so rapidly in the sector that the combined entity, Microsoft and Activision, will just make up one part of it. So I think if it were a bit of a closed market with a number of key players, such as the defense and arms industry, then it would be a little more difficult, I think, to get through. But my sense is this will go through, and we may hear something about this in the next few weeks.
Yeah, certainly a story to keep a close eye on. So last one we're going to touch on now, Alan, around the topic of acquisitions, mergers and acquisitions, is Amur Minerals, up 10% today after what's been quite a strong few weeks for Amur. There's some press speculation about the possible takeover of their assets there. That sort of died off in terms of the initial rally, but we're back up today, Alan. So what do you think is happening there?
Well, again, any potential takeover or interest from a purchaser is never, sometimes these take place behind the scenes and the company makes the announcement and the news, hits the light of day then. But invariably, the process is a protracted one. It takes place over a number of months as the two sides look to find common ground. But certainly, Amur Minerals, of course, it owns the huge nickel copper sulfide asset in the far east of Russia, the Kunmani license in the Amur province or the Amur province. And it's one of the largest undeveloped nickel sulfide assets in the world, 155 million tons of ore within four deposits, and it's prospective for nickel, copper, cobalt, platinum, and palladium, with an average grade of around 1%. So it's a huge asset, and this has been going for years. I remember Amur Minerals looking at previous management in the noughties. So it's been around a long time. And the company's got the right to recover all the contained metal based on a 20-year production license, which expires in 2035. So, there's plenty of time to bring the mine on stream and develop. But, of course, all of these metals are battery metals. It's located where it is. It's close to the Chinese EV manufacturing plants, Japanese and Korean. And they're going to be manufacturing a huge percentage of the world's electric vehicles. So the interest in the asset doesn't surprise me at all. Of course, the company said that the approach was made from an interested party valuing the asset at up to 100 million sterling. And of course, that sort of prompted a surge in the share price, and it's died back since. But, I think this is going to rumble on. And of course, once deals like this get closer to completion, often other interested parties emerge, because there is without doubt going to be a supply squeeze. And we've discussed this many times, I know, and we're going to discuss another one shortly too. But there is going to be a supply squeeze for the battery industry with these key metals, metals like nickel, metals like lithium, graphite, all the key components of batteries. There's going to be massive demand in the coming years, and there simply isn't enough being produced at the moment to satisfy that demand. So an asset like this is hugely valuable. So this could just be the opening salvo. We might see somebody come in with an offer that well exceeds that. So if you're an Amur Minerals shareholder, well done. Keep hold of them, sit on the shares. The company's got a valuation now of just 41 million, so well under the 100 million offer that's been tabled. If it goes to 100 million, 150 million, who knows? It would be a really, really a great day for shareholders when that happens.
Yes. No, it seems as though they're in the midst of a scramble to secure deposits of battery metals. As you mentioned there, lithium and nickel and also copper all have forecasts for demand that are well in excess of current levels of supply. So naturally, that's going to lead, and it has led so far this year, if you're looking especially at the prices of lithium and nickel, to astronomical moves to the upside. And until we see that supply move up to a level that can meet that future demand, all of these assets are going to be of great interest to producers and obviously those companies that are out there seeking the resources to produce the batteries. And as you did say, Alan, we are going to finish off now with a company that's very much involved in battery metals, in particularly lithium. It's actually Cadence Minerals. Now, Cadence Minerals are going to be presenting at our Metals and Mining Conference, which is coming up on the 22nd of February. So do check on the UK Investor Magazine website in the events section, because you'll be able to see the events page there and get yourself signed up for it. But Cadence, and this is one we've highlighted in a selection of stocks, Alan, very recently, of lithium shares here in London to keep an eye on. Not only are they looking at Cadence Minerals, not only looking at lithium, they've got a very strong portfolio. So what's the latest from them?
Well, it's really interesting that we're seeing all of the different elements within the Cadence portfolio really coming to the fore again. You published an article, well, UK Investor Magazine published an article recently on the lithium asset, and of course this was the lithium asset in Czechoslovakia, the Sinovec mine owned by European Metals Holdings. Cadence of course has a stake in the mine, just under a 9% stake in European Metals Holdings, and European Metals Holdings announced that the project net present value, NPV8 post tax, had increased from $1.1 billion just under $2 billion, which is a huge jump, and that was that valuation is based on lithium prices of $17,000 a ton, significantly below the current market price and where we believe that price is going to go. And you made an interesting point. You know, with that valuation, Cadence stake is worth $12.4 million, and Cadence's market capitalization at the moment is just $38 million. So it leaves a very small amount of money to attribute to the rest of the assets. And of course, the flagship asset, as we know, is the Imapa iron ore mine. I won't go into details on that today, but that in itself is, Cadence has 20% of an asset that was valued by Anglo-American at $600 million in 2012. They're about to go up to 27%, and then they have the first right of refusal to go to 49%. You then add in the hard rock lithium assets in Australia. You then add in the stake at the Megalit and Mexalit assets at the Sonora Lithium Project in Mexico. And then today, there's an article in the Financial Times about the Yangibana Rare Earths Project in Australia. And here, there's a very good map, actually, that Cadence have, which actually shows the size and the scale of the Yangibana project. It's in the Gascoyne region of Western Australia, and Cadence have a 30% stake in part of that project, which is the Yangibana North area. Now, this hasn't currently been brought into the NPV numbers at Yangibana yet, but as the project develops and as the asset infrastructure is developed, that will obviously become a significant factor in it. The news today in the FT is that the Australian government has backed, of course, the Yangibana Rare Earths Mine. It agreed a $140 million Australian dollar project financing loan to the Yangibana Rare Earths project, which is to Hastings Technology Metals. And Hastings, of course, is looking to raise $400 million Australian dollars in debt finance for the project to bring this online. And of course, what that will do, it will serve to break China's dominance of the rare earth metals sector, which is hugely important. And it, I think projects like this, whilst they have the valuations they have at the moment, I think in a few years' time, they're going to be valued at many times more than the levels that we're seeing. So from Cadence's standpoint, it has all of the stakes in the assets that it has are all starting to really emerge as significant as assets that really have great valuation at the moment, but are still significantly undervalued given the scenario and the supply squeeze that we're expecting to see. And of course, the great thing about the Gascoigne project and the Anjibar rare earth project is it will break or serve to break some of China's dominance in the rare earth sector.
So, I mean, when we're looking at these battery metals, Adam, is there anyone from your research which is really standing out? Because, you know, there is this element of putting them all into one basket and calling them battery metals. But as we've seen in the prices of these metals this year, there is a disparity in terms of how much they're moving. I mean, if you had to make yourself overweight in any one of these battery metals, you know, lithium, nickel, graphite, copper. I mean, is there anyone that sort of stands out for you, which is particularly taking your interest at the moment?
Well, I think lithium, cobalt, nickel, copper. My portfolio basket represents all of those, and I'm quite happy with that exposure. Even though, as we know, John, the valuation of some of these companies at the moment is ridiculously low, and I'm fully expecting a recovery to kick in at some point. And I believe once that supply squeeze starts to manifest itself, you know, on the world stage, and I've used this quote many times, but I think it really serves to highlight where we're going. Elon Musk and Tesla. Elon forecast or was making forecasts that he wants to ramp production of Tesla cars up to 20 million. And of course, Tesla is a small factory when you compare it to the likes of Ford, BMW, Toyota, and all the rest of it. But he wants to ramp up production of Tesla cars to 20 million. If he does that, he will hoover up, Tesla alone will hoover up 30% of global nickel production outright. You know, that's it. Global nickel production for 1 year, 30% of it goes to Tesla. So you get some idea of where we're heading. You know, once all the manufacturers are starting to ramp up production to those sort of levels, and you know, that's before you get to some of the huge Korean and Chinese manufacturers coming on stream too, there is going to be a huge shortage. So the net result is that the price per ton of these metals, lithium, copper, cobalt, nickel, they're going to go through the roof.
Yes, indeed. And we're starting to see that so far this year, Alan. So for listeners that want to know more about Cadence Minerals, as I said at the beginning before we started to speak about them, do check out the UK Investor Magazine website and our events section, because they're going to be giving an investor presentation on the 22nd of February. So do get yourself signed up for that. So just a recap there of the equities we discussed today. So we start off with Vodafone with the ticker of VOD. It was then Amur Minerals that trades under the ticker of AMC. And just then was Cadence Minerals trading under the ticker of KDNC. Alan, thank you much for being with us today.
Thank you, John.
Thank you very much.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the UK Investor Magazine podcast. Please do share the podcast, and we really value any reviews and comments you leave us in your chosen podcast player. The views presented by the hosts and guests of the UK Investor Magazine podcast are in no way investment advice, and please remember, all investment involves risk.